on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Emma and Roz for getting us through this wet and dark evening. It's Monday the 18th of November and you're listening to Game On with me, Ruby Walsh. And for one night only, the sports guy is back, Andrew O'Connor.
Thanks, Ruby. Coming up between now and the new music show with Beto Da Silva at 7 o'clock, we'll look back in another difficult night for Irish football with Stephen Kelly and Alan Cawley. And yet another amazing weekend for Drogheda United as we're joined in studio by Drogs boss Kevin Doherty.
And a week after a disappointing defeat to the All Blacks, Andy Farrell's men got back to winning ways against Argentina. Keane Tracy will be here to discuss Ireland's performances.
And Tyrese Taylor's triumph in Texas, Kevin Byrne looks back at Katie's latest victory over Amanda Serrano as we wonder, is the triple really on?
As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
And it's been
Game On 2FM.
Well, it has been. I was dead right. It has been a wet and dark Monday so far. Some of the sporting headlines from a busy day of sport. Derry's 2022 Ulster Championship winning captain Chrissy McCaig is retiring from intercounty football at the age of 35, an All-Star 2 years ago. McCaig will continue to line out for his club, Slotonaíl, with whom he has won 16 county titles, 11 of those coming in hurling. And Ireland captain Caelan Doris has been nominated for the World Rugby Men's Player of the Year Award. Terry Kennedy and Jamie Osborne, Aaron King and James Lowe have also been shortlisted for the 2024 awards. Northern Ireland can gain promotion up to League B tonight of the Nations League if Michael O'Neill's team can at least draw away with Luxembourg. Scotland can qualify for the quarterfinals if they can beat Poland in Group A1. And Ballinitty Golf Club in County Limerick has been announced as the venue for the 2027 Junior Ryder Cup.
Lots of Ryder Cup action in Limerick, isn't there?
Loads of Ryder Cup action. It's going to be the home of Ryder Cup, County Limerick. Adair Manor getting ready for the senior event. And now Ballinitty added to that list of wonderful golf clubs who have been deemed good enough to host, I suppose, golf's most prominent, post-intercontinental competition?
I don't know how you pronounce it. Not really. I didn't even know there was a Junior Ryder Cup. But hey, it's on at Ballinitty in 2027 anyway. So if you want to get your tickets, you know where to get them. Alan Cawley is with us as well. Alan, you going to pretend that you went home early again this Sunday night, or after Drogheda stayed in the Premier League, are we going to get the whole truth?
He can't. We have the evidence.
Well, the beauty of it tonight, Ruby, is you can ask the manager himself, because I've brought him in to have a chat with you.
I was doing some laughing reading his quotes as well. All focus, all focus. I was thinking he obviously didn't hear Cawley on the radio last Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm more professional tonight, and apologies about last weekend. But if you can't celebrate your best mate winning the FAI Cup, when can you ever celebrate?
No, I'm afraid if you don't celebrate, then you have no chance. Alan, what about the weekend? Did you have a highlight?
Actually had a couple, Ruby, and you'll be one close to your heart. I loved the November meeting in Cheltenham. To me, it kind of kicks off the national hunt season, which you know I'm a big fan of. But Potter's Charm was one that I was blown away with over the weekend, and it was back on Friday. I thought a brilliant performance, and Sam Twiston Davis, I think, gave a great ride as well. So I loved that meeting. That kicked off Friday. I got up for the boxing in the middle of the night as well. Katie Taylor was absolutely phenomenal. A brilliant fight, bit controversial. Not particularly pleased with some of the comments from her coach, and particularly Amanda Serrano as well, and she's retracted some of them afterwards and made an apology, which I think she should have, because they were an absolute disgrace, some of the comments from their team, if you like. And then on Saturday, Ruby, I have to finish off the League of Ireland season with another mention to Drogheda, because I was in Tala and the boys got the job done as well, staying up obviously and beating Bray. So that was my weekend highlights.
Not so bad. Andrew O'Connor, do you have a weekend highlight, surely?
I did have I had a couple of weekend highlights, but I have to give a highlight, a big shout out to St. Vincent's Camogie team, who won the Leinster Championship final yesterday against Piltown in Tullamore. One of the team, of course, one of my physios, and I have an appointment with her tomorrow at 9 o'clock, so I hope she's not going to be
one of your physios. How many physios do you have?
At least two. Do you know how broken I am, Alan? Anyway, big shout out to Eve Higgins and all the team there at St. Vincent's. An amazing victory in that Leinster Championship, and they really had to pull out the stops. They needed extra time to get over Piltown, and but there were lots of highlights on offer. I mean, Rory crying, but there was a lot of tears in the golf this weekend.
Not sure about the tears.
Fine if it was my highlight. Not sure about the tears. Arsenal promotion get the better of all of us, as my kids often slag me when I shed a tear, so I'm not going to slag Rory McIlroy for shedding it. But I must say, when I watched him at the weekend, he was my sporting highlight. Start with a bogey and then go birdie, almost an eagle on two, birdie on three, birdie on four, birdie on five to go two clear. And then it was like, he was kept lipping out. He was getting them so close we couldn't get them in. And he must have been doubting himself. I mean, the year he's had, gets onto the back nine, goes back to level, like going into 15, gets in the bunker, an unbelievable shot off the edge of the green to get it close. Like, he was fighting, and I just thought it was great to see him go and win something.
What about that shot in 17, Ruby? On the par 3?
Unbelievable, the 6-iron to 10 feet. Yeah. It was an incredible shot. I mean, there were shots everywhere that were just unreal for him.
Or was it the one on 16 to about a foot and a half?
They hit 3 wood first and then hit his second to tread. What did he say?
Yeah, it was
6 inches. Not even I could miss this. You know, just I did think there was absolute. I thought it was brilliant to watch him. And yeah, you can say whether he was too emotional or not when it was all over. But I mean, with the year he's had, 4 wins, all the near misses is what he'd be remembered for. But to finish the season on a high, I just thought it was great to watch. And whatever way you look at it, he is the most high-profile Irish sports person in the world. And I thought it was great to see him winning again.
Now let's hear him with a gulp in his throat.
It means a lot.
Gather yourself, I'll keep talking, you just take a deep breath.
Yeah, I've been through a lot this year, professionally, personally, and it feels like the fitting end to 2024. I've persevered this year a lot, had close calls, wasn't able to get it done.
You've won your 6th race to Dubai, equaling the legendary Severiano Ballesteros. Just describe the sense of achievement.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think everyone knows what Seve means to European golf, to Ryder Cup players. European Ryder Cup locker room, all we have are quotes of Seve. He means so much to European golf, and for me to be mentioned in the same breath, I'm very proud.
Very proud is right. Keane Tracy, I do believe you're in studio too. Sorry for ignoring you at the top of the show. Did you enjoy your weekend?
I did. No, none of you mentioned rugby, though. I presume that's why I was put in to give the obligatory reference. I was at the Aviva Stadium on Friday night. It was actually a cracking game. I know we're going to get into and talk about it in detail later on, but it was a brilliant weekend. I think the Autumn Nation Series has been class so far. In terms of a highlight for me, I think it was the Stade de France on Saturday night. France 30, New Zealand 29. A game that lived up to the billing, I'd say, unlike the Ireland All Blacks game a week before. And I thought the pre-match stuff, the way the Stade de France, I don't know if you guys saw it, but dimmed the lights and had this Stade de France in the French colours, and then just had a spotlight on the Haka. I know the Haka isn't for everyone. I think it's cool. But it was, yeah, look, there's a lot of talk about the Aviva Stadium atmosphere and how you can, the RFU could maybe make it a little bit better and things like that, but you just have to look at what the French do. I mean, look at what they did at the Olympics, the World Cup last year. They know how to put on a good show, and I thought that was absolutely amazing.
Ah, come on now. At least, like, when you go to France, it's a full stadium. You know, you look down to the Aviva to the left-hand side where that bit of a stadium is.
Yeah, it's like, very true.
It's always going to be better than the Aviva.
Yeah, and the Stade de France there is very, like, it's definitely one of the best. I've been lucky enough to been to a lot of stadiums around the world, but Stade de France is right up there when it's packed for a big France game, and I just thought that was class.
It was an incredible game. Andrew, there was more of motion in golf as well, though. It wasn't just poor Rory.
There was. Not only was there more motion, but there were far more tears involved. And before we get on to this, great news as well, because one of our Irish lady golfers is in Tour Championship action. She qualified, and that is Leona Maguire. She is going to go in the, I think it's $11 million on offer for the end of their season championship this year. But anyway, let us get back to the men's. On the PGA Tour, Rafael Campos, he came up, I think, from one of the junior tours, didn't he, Ruby?
Just Corn Ferry last year, yeah.
Yeah, and he had gone through this PGA Tour season and he had missed 18 cuts in a row and he was destined to lose his tour card until he won yesterday. And after his victory, he gave this interview.
Rafa Campos, talk us through this week. What a week it's been.
It's been an unbelievable week. Best week of my life. After such a bad year, to have things kind of go my way, everything together at once. I'm just so happy and grateful to have the support I do. My team, my coaches, my sponsors, my family. My caddy did a great job today. I just can't believe this is actually happening to me after such a year. And I'm just grateful to be able to call myself a PGA Tour champion. It's something I've dreamt about all my life. And I just can't wait to call my family. It's been such a bad year, ball striking wise. And I still believed in myself. I know my support team always believed in myself. But this game is so hard to, when things are not going well, it's so hard to actually get yourself to be confident. And things have just been so different this week. I just don't know. I'm just so grateful to be able to finish on top of the leaderboard.
Emotional scenes in the golf.
If you're going to do tears, do Hollywood blubbering mess tears like that.
Now, in all fairness, he's 36. So he probably has well thought over the last few years, I've got maybe one or two chances to go on the PGA Tour. As Ruby said, got his Corn Ferry sort of promotion last year, didn't make any headway, thought he's blown his chances, he's going to lose his tour card, and suddenly he's got a full tour card for next season and loads of cash in his pocket.
Yeah, but there's two sides of that coin. I can't imagine traipsing around on the PGA Tour is cheap either. So whatever he would have earned on the Corn Ferry, I'd say, was dwindling rapidly as he was making cuts all through the season on the PGA. So you think you get one chance, your wife at home, kid this week, and all of a sudden he basically wins the lotto.
I'd love to know, Ruby, what the transformation was to go, like, obviously you look at Rory and the consistency that he's had all year going close, and so that would obviously breed confidence and you know you're playing well. But for a lad who's missing cuts week after week, then to come out and win the tournament,
I don't know. What did he say? Like, his wife, when he got home from hospital with her baby, I think on Tuesday or Wednesday, he just about got into Bermuda 90 minutes before he was due to tee off. And I don't know, did he line up and think, I have a family at home, whatever happens, they're grand, I'm just going to play and enjoy it?
Yeah,
it's something as simple as that.
Yeah, we've often discussed that, haven't we, Ruby, around preparation and stuff, and sometimes we overthink everything and the stuff that goes on, the level of detail analysis, whereas he probably just rocked up thinking, I've nothing to lose, and just goes out and plays.
I'd be guilty of that, and that paralysis from analysis.
Well, he certainly has cash in the bank now, and he can afford that new carrier he was looking at, and that new child seat for sure. Any other sporting highlights of the week before we deem the weekend done and talked about?
I don't know, was there for me? No, I did enjoy the rugby, and we'll get to that with Keane in a while. I thought there was some. So I thought some of the sidesteps this weekend in particular, it was like rugby of old, were incredible. We'll get to them in a while.
Okay.
We're not going to mention Wembley, are we?
Later.
What happened in Wembley? Okay, listen, let's take a break. We'll gather our thoughts we will talk about Wembley and the brilliant first half performance by Ireland after this break.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On, where we're going to turn our attention to soccer. So there might have been smiles and delight at the Aviva Stadium. There was tears of joy all over golf courses all around the world. But I'm not really sure what you say about Wembley. I don't even know if there was tears. It was that bad. Stephen Kelly, we're going to start with you. England 5, Ireland 0. It was low.
Yeah, it was low. It's hard because I know it's such a cliche that every game is your perhaps, but like the first half being tight, resilient, England dominating, but then the second half, as soon as it goes off, then it just changed, and they concede the three goals so quickly. You concede one from the penalty, yeah, fair enough, but then can you stay tight, can you stay resilient to lose the goals the way we did? And then we just capitulated, and it was a team that just, they smelled blood, they felt like they'd get at us, they felt like they'd get behind us. Yes, there's a massive guffing class, and I actually said this when Lee Carsey was married in England in 21, and this is no disrespect to the Irish team whatsoever, but this is just the difference in the levels that we're at compared to England. I said England on the 21 team would probably be Ireland comfortably, because they're all Premier League players, top level, and effectively that's what happened. His 21 team from a couple of years ago that won the Euros beat us last night, and it's because England have the strength and depth. It's ridiculous what they have at their disposal. But, you know, for Ireland, it was about trying to stay in the game as long as you could. And like I said, the sending off did not help whatsoever. And then we got picked apart.
It didn't help, Alan, the sending off. Of course it didn't help. But when you look at it overall, you look at the Finland game last week, we were, I don't know, were we lucky? Weren't we lucky? where are we going? Where's this international team? Do we need to get relegated out of League B down to League C?
Yeah, there could be an argument for that, Ruby, in the sense that you look at Northern Ireland at the moment picking up results and doing very well, and that breeds confidence, because we're getting into the habit now. It's just deflation every week when obviously we play the matches and you're losing, and you do, it becomes a habit, just like winning becomes a habit. And unfortunately for us, we're in a league that we're just, we're so out of our depth when it comes to playing against England. Now, fair enough, against Finland you could argue a similar standard, but as you says, the game on Thursday night, we were lucky. Finland were the better team, they should have probably beat us. But you look at the game yesterday, and strangely enough, though, Ruby, the 5-0 is embarrassing, absolutely, and humiliating. What disappointed me more than anything, I was actually more deflated after the home game here in the Aviva, where I thought we never laid a glove on them and we were so outplayed, and England were brilliant that day, probably the best I'd seen them in a long time. But coming off the back of such a brilliant first half performance, and even though scales get sent off, we were still well in the game in terms of we were competitive, we were laying the odd little glove on them, the couple of balls over the top, Evan should have had a penalty, but we completely unravelled after scales got sent off. And it wasn't as even as if England were carving us open at will. The goals that we conceded were set pieces, so to me that's just a lack of concentration, fellas switching off, and I don't think that's allowed. And I think that's the biggest problem and the biggest disappointment for me when you're coming off the back of such a good performance. I was still weary at half time, even though we were playing quite well. I had said that I'd still be very weary, because even though it is a good 45, these have players that can change a game in an instant, like we've seen with Harry Kane's pass, absolutely phenomenal, and these are world class players. But what disappointed me was the concession of the goals, particularly from the set pieces, because they're avoidable. That's lads not, that, as I said, just switching off and just kind of not doing your job properly, and that's what was probably the biggest disappointment for me of the night.
Biggest disappointment, getting beaten from set pieces. But Stephen Kelly, what does Heimer do now? He kind of sounded disappointed too. He kind of felt they hinted that they half gave up.
Yeah, he was pretty skating initially, and I think he rolled back in it slightly. He was kind of, he said that there was a bit of a capitulation, wasn't he? It's good, that's not exactly his words, but he went along those lines, as if they dropped their heads so quickly, and he was disappointed with how they could see this, you know, back after straight away. And it just, you could tell there was a real frustration that they just couldn't stay solid. And you know, often you see teams go down to 10 men and they almost become harder to play against. I know that sounds crazy, but that often is the case. Alan, we've been in that situation before where you're back against the wall. Yeah, prior to that, it was backs against the wall first for most of it, but you should get a bit more doggedness about you. So I think he was really disappointed for us, and maybe the sense that he felt he got rid of the, oh no, we're going to lose again. I think maybe he felt he turned a corner in Finland, that we got over the line of being able to just get through a game, win it, even if it's kind of ugly. Whereas against England, we conceded, and then we just conceded so quickly afterwards. And I think that was what disappointing was. There wasn't a sense of, right, let's just get it together, let's keep them out. And then we just capitulated. So it was frustrating for the manager. But he has to go forward. He has to think, right, England, write it off, and where can we pick up points? Where can we pick up wins against the nations that we should be beating? And whether we get relegated or not, I think it's a long road forward for Ireland when it comes to qualification for major tournaments.
So this particular phase of the Nations League is over. We will have to go into a playoff because we finished third against a team that finishes second in League C, which will either be Slovakia, Armenia, the winners of Bulgaria and Belarus, and most likely Kosovo. That's not until March. If you're the manager, are there any other personnel you can look at to maybe bring in? How do you change this? Where's your mindset? How do you make things better?
Yeah, I'm sure he's looking at that as well, Ruby, but the problem with international football is the limitations that you have in terms of the personnel that you can use. So I'm sure they're scouring around for lads that they could use. Whether those would be lads that would improve us, I'm not so sure what's out there or what's maybe available to them. But certainly in terms of the games that are coming up, the playoff games, I think they'll be beneficial to the manager, because I think we wasted so much time in appointing this manager 8-9 months, that if you think of the 4 games that John O'Shea had, those friendly games, he would have had these Heimer Hallgrimsson, and he would have been able to implement what he was trying to do in those 4 games and set him up a little bit better for obviously these last 6 competitive ones that he's had. But we wasted that time, and now he's still in a position where he's still finding out about these lads, Ruby, and he's still trying to implement, I suppose, what his thoughts and how he wants to play, philosophy, if you like, whatever word you want to use. So I think we wasted time there. So I actually think going forward, the positive news regardless of whether it's a playoff or not, it's two more games for the manager. And then if we do go into the qualification campaign, which looks likely for the World Cup with a four-team group, that means we'll have June as well, the June friendlies, because the first competitive game won't be till September. So you could use them games as well. So all of a sudden you could have four, five games in the build-up to the World Cup qualification. And you would like to think then there's a bit more improvement, there's a bit more... I'm not sure if feel good factor is the right thing around the squad, but at least we might be better prepped going into those qualification games in September. But Stephen's right, it's a long road back, Ruby. We've said this many times on the show, like, things are really, really grim and bleak for Irish football at the moment at international level. And regardless of who we get in a playoff, you're mentioning teams like Armenia and Kosovo, and years ago we would have been thinking, well, we'll definitely beat them. I wouldn't fancy us against any of those.
We'd have been thinking, where are they?
Yeah, probably.
Before we get talking about Kosovo and Albania, I want to just momentarily pause and consider last night's game as well. Stephen, we all got to half time last night, and probably for the first time in many matches, we all had our shoulders back a bit and we thought, this is the way we should be playing. I mean, in that first half, I know we got beaten 5-0, but in that first half, I mean, we physically pushed England around. We didn't give them any space. We went through them. They didn't have a second. And they looked rattled at half time as they walked in. And I think we all thought, is this the way we should be playing?
Well, it is the way we should be playing. That's a blueprint for how this Irish team, you have to look at what you have at your disposal as a manager, and you go, right, we're going to be outclassed. If we try and go toe to these, we try and play out from the back, we try and do all the things that England want to do, they're going to beat us comfortably. So we have to disrupt, we have to frustrate, we have to be in their faces, we have to use that edge, that bite to our game. The fact that this game means more to us than it does to them in pride for Ireland type thing, we have to use that to our advantage. And going forward against the bigger nations, because where we are seeding now, we're only going to get tough teams to play against in qualifying. So we have to be able to take a scalp. And taking a scalp against one of those nations it's going to be a dogged, dogged performance from Ireland. And that first half is a blueprint of how right we go about it. And we can frustrate a team. We can, you're going to be under the cosh, but can you defend the numbers? You put a defender into midfield. All those things, tactics you can use to try and think, right, this is how, when it comes to that crucial moment that we have to get a result against a bigger nation that's far more superior to us quality-wise, how do we do it? And that first half is how you do it. Absolutely how you do it, especially with this group of players we have. And then we beat the Finlands and we beat the teams around us. But that's important that we know that's how we do it. Second half, you capitulate and you go off. But you have to have something from that where you realise this is how we have to go about our business.
And Alan, is that's the first... I mean, was last night's game probably the most important game for the new manager? Because at last now we have one foundation block. That's the way we play. And we have it.
And that's, look, no matter what game you play, and as disappointing as it was, and the scoreline, the reflection, and how humiliating or embarrassing it was, you still have to try and look for some sort of positive, because you have to move forward, Andrew. And the first half was, we were really good at half time. I thought the game plan was really working. He tried Collins, centre midfield, and that deep lying role, and he was reverting back to a third centre half at times when we were defending deep as well. And it was working well, and you're right, Kane was getting frustrated. He was getting into a few verbals with Malumbi. Bellingham had been booked as well. And all of a sudden, you're thinking, we have them a little bit rattled here. But
and what if they were 1-0 down and down to 10 men? What if we were 1-0 up and they were down to 10 men, as it should have been? I mean, VAR, that decision. I mean, there should have been two penalties in the one
incident. Whether he would have been sent off, I'm not so sure, because if the ball is so wide from the goal, it's not like he denied a goal-scoring opportunity, but it's definitely a penalty, 100%. And it would have been a different game, of course. And as the old saying goes, goals change games, and that would have been a chance for us to go 1-0 up. But it's all ifs, buts and maybes as well, Andrew. And to be fair, when you look at, I suppose, just moving forward, he has to maybe take that first half performance. But I still think there's question marks around even, like, he played Dar O'Shea as right full. Dar O'Shea, I think, is one of our best centre halves. He needs to play centre half. Young McGuinness coming in, I know he's a young player, didn't do all that wrong, to be fair to him, but that was a surprise for me that he started the match as well. So I think we can be critical of those things with the manager in terms of the personnel that he's using as well.
Stephen, just before we let you go, Lise Carsley obviously heads off now away from English football and Tommy Tuchel takes over, but did any of those players who wanted to be in Wembley last night put themselves into Tommy Tuchel's mind?
I think a lot of them did. And I think what Carsley has done, which is kind of hilarious, is he's probably thrown a few curveballs for Tuchel, because you would have felt Kane still starts. I don't think they get ahead of him. But I think starting Watkins has showed an option that England have when it comes to energy in the previous match against Greece, that if they want to go press teams, if they want to have high energy, absolutely. Like you absolutely think that when it comes to it, like Matawaki, I thought he was superb. I think he just looks so dangerous. Whether he keeps a place in that team, but they have ridiculous options. They have ridiculous options. And the thing about Tuchel is, which I like about Tuchel is, I don't think Tuchel's afraid to make big calls because he wasn't afraid about upsetting the hierarchy when it came to a club, and that would have more detrimental effect on his career because certain players you probably expect, the club would expect him to play when you're coaching the PSGs or you're facing the Bayerns or Chelsea. And if you don't toe a line with that, the club might get annoyed at you. With England, there's no one from above is going to give him grief for dropping players, so it's going to be down to him. And I think he's got enough character about him to go, well, you're not going to play today. I fancy him. This is the way I want to play. If you don't toe the line, you're not going to be involved. And that could work with international football because you would think that England are going to have to be pretty firm, and there's going to be a lot of disappointed players out there are playing that we would bite their hands off to have an air team that won't even get close to that team for England.
Yeah, there will be decisions to be made, but look, obviously the Republic of Ireland was a disappointing story yesterday, but Drogheda United most definitely weren't. And Kevin Doherty is going to join us in the studio in a minute. Stephen, thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Up in attack, Douglas James Taylor Bulger with a shot and finds the back of the net. They're in front, Drogheda United, in the 32nd minute, and what a moment for Drogheda United. James Bulger, while he met it as it fell his way and right footed, it beat Jimmy Corcoran in the break goal, and Drogheda United make the breakthrough 1-0. Pouy now trying to step away from Zach Nolan, sends it down the line. Darren Markey just inside the area, right across the face of goal. They got a second, and it's Piero. What a really deft flick at the near post, and Drogheda United are looking really good now. They lead by 2-0, and it's an exquisite finish from Franz Piero. A little back heel as Darren Markey squared it run across the face of goal, and at the near post, Piero was there. He made no mistake. Coughed it up, and Markey delivers to Piero inside the area. Piero with a shot. He makes no mistake this time. 7 minutes after the restart. Well, he's bagged his second of the afternoon, and Drogheda United lead by 3-0. No stopping Franz Piero this time.
No stopping Franz Piero is right. Kevin Doherty joins us in studio. Kevin, you've had an incredible week, but you've probably had an incredible 17 weeks because on the 12th of July, you were bottom of the Premier League. Dundalk had just beaten you, and now you're sitting here, still in the Premier League, FAI Cup winners. It's been some journey.
Yeah, Ruby, thank God. When you mentioned that date, it's been etched in my mind for the last few months because it was certainly, in some ways, a turning point. And the big thing for us was when we were beaten, obviously, by Dundalk in the league, we actually had them the following week in the FAI Cup in the first round. So very rare in probably football that you get a chance to bounce back or hit back or whatever. That you're not only were they our rivals in locality and all, but they were literally the team that we were sort of competing with to try and stay in the league. So it gave us that chance to really, really work hard that week and hip straight back, and lucky enough we beat them in the cup, and our results, our form, everything sort of snowballed from there. Everybody talks about momentum in anything, but I found in football momentum is an unbelievable thing. It can go one way or the other. Like, you know, if you're on a bad run, you can sometimes never find your way out of it, but sometimes just winning that one game. And I do remember saying it to the players before that game or in the week leading up to it. Like I said, this, I'm telling you, Daz, this is the one. Like, if we can just hit straight back, we can pick up, because we had been earlier in the season, the start of the season, we've been playing okay, but not necessarily picking up as many points as we would like. We probably lost a couple of games, we could have drawn a couple of games, we could have won, but we had a couple of tough months, probably June, July, and as I said, then the 12th of July would being probably the toughest moment and month for me, because it was just. Again, nobody likes to lose any game, but to lose to your local rivals, that, you know how much that game affects everyone around the club, around the town, all the supporters, everybody. And I did feel coming off the pitch that day that, like, we really had to sort of hit back as soon as we could, and lucky enough it went on from there.
I know it went on, and when you win a game you get confidence and things move on, but when you were walking around the club that week, 13, 14, 15, 16th of July, how did you convince people that your theory was right?
You just have to believe in what. Like, I mean, I find
it. No, you have to believe it. How did you make them believe it?
Well, this is the thing. Like, they trust it. It's not as if like it's the first time I've ever spoken to the players. Not as if I haven't worked with these players for 3 years. A lot of them, not as if been managing and being successful with the club over the previous year. So you just have to get players to basically. A lot of time it's back to basics and stuff like that. The goals we were conceding at the time were so preventable that I'm not saying it was an easy fix, but we did make a few changes after that game for the cup game, and as I said, lucky enough we came out the right side of it. But you do have to sometimes strip it all back and work on the basics. I mean, sometimes it can be very neglected if everything's tactical and you're moving him from there and places all on the board all around the place. But for a goalkeeper, you have to just stop shots going into the goal. For a defender, you just have to head things away from the box. For centre forward or strikers or midfielders, you want to score goals. Like, you do sometimes have to really, really strip it back. And
I think, Kevin, sorry to jump in, but I think what Ruby means is just in terms of the belief you were giving the players, is it more just about the relationships you have with them as well? Because the one thing that struck me, regardless of the results or being bottom of the table, and when you look at the final and the way they performed, the spirit and the bond amongst them. So how do you create that, or how does that kind of manifest itself around the place?
But again, I think the word is honesty, and I still trusted those players, and I had to let them know I still trusted them. Just because results weren't going well, it didn't mean that we were going to change any of the messages that me and Darren and the staff would be giving the players. It was the same messages when we were losing. It's just unfortunately we were, as I said, conceding stupid goals, and we weren't scoring enough. So you do have to, and it's not just me. Any manager will tell you have to have that belief in what you're saying is the right message for players, and it's not just the players, it's your staff, it's everybody around you that has to believe it in as well. And even though it was tough, and as I said, it was very, very hard, probably a couple of months, you're in the wrong game if you don't actually believe, because there's plenty of people who go out and I'd love to take that job, or I'd love to die, or I could do that job. You have to believe in what you're saying is right. And I do find, and you're right, the relationship I have and my staff have with the players is really, really strong and really good. But I do think, just by being honest with them, and like I tell them if when they haven't been good, I tell them when they have been good, I love them one day and maybe hate them next, and likewise they're probably the same with me. So I just think if you're consistent with your messaging as well, like, you know, if I start asking people to do stuff that I haven't been asking them to do for the last 3 years, then I mean you're completely throwing everything out. So there's absolutely consistency and honesty, I think, is are the two words that I would go with.
Two very contrasting emotions: win an FAI Cup 1 week, stay in the Premier League the next week. For you personally, which was a bigger achievement?
Oh God, I was asked
question. Ruby, hit him with a good one.
Yeah, there was
no easy questions for me.
I know, this is why I haven't come in here for 3 years.
I told
when
this fellow's
been
grilling,
trying to get me
worry.
In all the time. No, it was really like, I mean, it was I don't know which journalist, one of the interviews afterwards was saying like Sunday the cup final was joy and the Saturday playoff was relief, and that's one of the best way I could put it. But obviously our goal at the start of the year was to try and make sure with the nature of where we are and we are going to be getting better and improving, but like how competitive the league was, the goal is to try and stay in the league, and I suppose that objective was only fulfilled on Saturday, so to wait a long time for that. But the cup was just, I mean, I was listening to the two golfers crying on the thing. I think I started all that off last week. They must have been watching the cup.
He loves
the
tear, Ruby.
But it was like that was a completely, like, I mean, it took me nearly by surprise, and I turned around, my daughters and the wife were behind me in the stand, and my mum, my brother and sister, and that just hit me like. But that was pure joy, and to be honest, and people may have thought it was just saying it for effect or anything, like, we really did. I know you were having a joke with Alan about the celebrations and all, but it really was that we had to, no matter who spoke to me all week, no matter who texted or messaged and any of that, every single one I got or every thought that I had in my head was, right, but we have Saturday, so we can enjoy the, probably even look, I didn't have looked back on the cup final properly because I wanted to sit back and really, really enjoy it, because, but it was always in my mind the whole time that, and I spoke to the players, funny enough, just before the game, in the dressing room in Tallaght, about, like, because we were playing Bray, and the Bray team from 99 were on the pitch at half time in the Aviva when we played, and it just sort of hit me when I said to them, like, in 25 years, lads, that'll be you, like, and can you just imagine how bad it will, or not how bad, it's probably the wrong word, you've won the FAI Cup, it's a great achievement, but it'll be certainly tinged with regret and sadness or whatever, we wonder if you look back and say, yeah, we were relegated a week later. So whatever motivates you, whatever motivates players, sometimes it can be, it can be fear of failure, sometimes it can be dreaming of a success, it can be whatever. So whatever every, each individual player had to do to motivate them to be ready for that week, then they all, to be fair, every single one of them carried it off, and it couldn't have been more professional. I said, we did go back to the hotel after the cup final. We had it, was, families were there, and in some ways it was sort of controlled because we were all staying together and we trained the next day. So it was a weird week, to be honest, like, as I said, you have everyone congratulating you 10 times a day, and but you know it's at the back of your mind.
Ruby, I couldn't say this last week, but what really happened was they all went to bed at 12 o'clock and I was the only one up, singing and dancing.
Oh, sure. You're what, Armin? I was always one of pro celebration when you achieve something magnificent. What does it mean for Drogheda, for the club, for the town? What will the vibe be like there this week?
Oh, stop it. It's unreal. And like, even you see, and I think it was a record for the playoff, record attendance for that playoff game. And it was moved from Richmond. It was supposed to be originally Richmond. It was moved to Tallaght. I think there was some construction or something in Richmond. But thankfully, it wasn't Tallaght because more people probably able to go. And you just, like, the colour and the energy and the noise and the our supporters bring. And to be fair to them, again, I'm not just trying to lick up to anyone, but when we had those couple of tough months, they were unbelievable as well. Like, United Park is sold out every week. They're, I think they're, every manager say they're the best supporters in the league, but they really, really are. Like, they've done an unbelievable job. But for the town itself, like, we were able to probably, because we knew we were in a playoff and a cup final with a couple of weeks to spare. Like, I'm not saying the last couple of games were meaningless, because they meant a lot to probably a couple of teams we were playing. So, but we were able to mentally start preparing for the couple of weeks to come. So even little things like getting all the stuff going down to schools and doing all that stuff a week or two before, like, you know, we didn't have to be thinking, oh, we have to get 3 points on Friday. So I was able to maybe bring more players than I would have done if we were still fighting to avoid relegation, like, or whatever, like, or had a chance of catching balls with a couple of games to go. But the place was hopping. Like, we went up there, like, there's a few videos going around the club put up on social media of players and even myself going into schools, and like, for the kids, like, you know, it's where, and I'm not talking about me, I'm talking about Franz and I'm talking about Dougie, and went into school, and it could have been Ronaldo or Messi walking in, the reaction they were getting from the kids. And you say, for the, like, it's, again, I'm at the club been nearly 7 years now, and like, I wouldn't have seen many Drogheda United jerseys going around the town, and there's no cliche at all, but there's very few Man United Liverpool jerseys go. These kids are just absolutely mad for it, and the vibe in the town itself, not just for the kids, for everybody, it's just so,
that's
good.
That's the thing, Ruby, that we often speak about, and you'd ask me here on a weekly basis, just in terms of what's happened in the League of Ireland. The stuff Kevin is just talking about there, if that was 5, 6, 7 years ago, it might not have been the same reaction. But when you go to games now, so many young kids, families, they're all invested, they're all involved. And that's why I think you asked the question about, of course, the cup is our showpiece day. Anytime you win that, I'm so envious of fellas that won it. It's an amazing, amazing competition every year. And for Kevin to win it was an unbelievable. But if they had to be relegated on Saturday, not just the fact that you're going into Division 1, but also you're going into Division 1 off the back of the fact that our league has never had as much interest, and now it's about to take off, and the Premier Division, and if you were to miss out on that and be in Division 1, and no disrespect to Division 1 clubs, I feel sorry for them, but the gulf in class now for the Division 1 to the Premier Division, both on and off the pitch, is absolutely monumental. So I think it would have been an absolute catastrophe had they got relegated. Now, I didn't tell him this during the week, but I can say it to him now, but it would have been because for those reasons, not just for the footballing reasons, but because of where the league is about to go and the interest that's in it at the moment.
I fully get that, and you see jerseys where it's going, and I mean this in the best possible way, Kevin, but for me, as someone who watches a little bit, I think Damien Duff has added hugely to it. Oh, a name like that, yeah, managing Shells, like, as purely, I think it's been huge for the League of Ireland, Alan.
Yeah, 100%, yeah, absolutely.
I totally agree, and like, I mean, he's brought so many more eyes on the league, and it's not just that, it's not just, like, it's very, and I actually contributed to a piece that was done on him there a couple of weeks ago, because I fully agree with Ruby that, like, it's not just the name coming in, he's worked so hard, and he's managed to win the league with Shelbourne for the first time since 2006, and done an unbelievable job with certainly wouldn't have been one of the top three budgets in the league, so he certainly brings an awful lot of attention to it. I think I remember hearing I think it was Dan McDonald's article. It was 17 of the top 20 articles related to the League of Ireland, with the figures, the readership figures were Duff. All on him, yeah. Mm. Which is massive. And as I said, it's great that he's in the league, but it's great that he's so invested in the league. And he has been from day one.
The thing, Ruby, with him as well, and this is why we all love him, he's so invested in it, and he absolutely, like, he wears his heart on his sleeve. You can see he's so passionate. But the stuff that he's been shouting about this year, we've been shouting about for 10, 12, 15 years. But when Damien Duff says it, compares to some of us saying it, it carries so much weight and so much clout. It's like if you were to come out tomorrow and be critical of Cheltenham, Ruby, the whole place would sit up and listen. And he carries the same weight as that of an absolute kind of iconic figure, if you like. And people, like, we're talking there at the start of the show about international football and where it's at. Like, the young kids wouldn't even realise this is one of the greatest players we've ever had. And to have him managing in our league, and not only just managing but winning things, which also carries a bit of weight when you're able to win things and back it up. And then the fact that he's so passionate as well, it really is, you're right, he's brought so much, and it's about to take off. It really is.
Kevin, can I ask you about community as well, because you touched on how important the community is and how it got behind the club. When you're at that moment, when you're starting off that good streak from July and you're trying to exude confidence and get it into the players, as the momentum kicks in a little bit and there's a victory here and a couple of goals there and a clean sheet here, is there a moment in that journey where you start getting that confidence from the town, from outside the club, from outside the immediate staff? And does that feed back into you?
Yeah, probably wins, like, you know, results will bring more supporters and more confidence in supporters. I said, we always had it within, like, you know, but certain things happened throughout on that winning run. Like, I mean, we beat Sligo over 7-0 when we had won against Wilton, who were a junior side in the cup, 9-0 the week before. So we scored 16 goals. We broke the record, like, in 9-0 was the biggest ever win, and then 7-0 was the biggest ever league win within the space of 2 weeks. So it was a bit crazy at times, but it just showed you, like, you know, everyone jumped on board that. But again, they really were never on our backs, or never on the players or me or anybody at all. Of course, you know, people are disappointed when you're sitting bottom of the league, and like, you know, nobody more disappointed than me. But to have that support in the background, and
that's
that
real
community
support, isn't it, Kevin?
Oh, 100%.
Like, it's easy to support teams when you're winning, Andrew. Yeah. But when you're losing, you know, that's proper
and
support.
Again, like we've had it. I said the 2 years previous when I was in charge, and the year before when Tim was in charge as well. Like, we did manage to punch fairly well above our weight. Like, things are certainly improving on stuff that we can do now, and Alan's right, like, what we can, like, it was, I genuinely think this would have been the worst year to go down, like, in a long, long time, because you can see the interest in the league, and there's so many more things happening with solidarity money for the league and for it being in the Premier Division and make things more possible. And with our new owners who came in, well, they started probably only took over officially in February, but it was the end of last year, around this time last year, that they were sort of having the vote with the members and stuff. Like, for them to come in now and have been able to improve so many things off the pitch for us, and even stuff like housing players and food and stuff like that we wouldn't have done. I mean, we stayed in a hotel before the playoff final as well, and that wouldn't have happened before. So we're only doing things now that other clubs have been doing and still do, but it certainly gives me the belief and the confidence in the future and wanting to be in the league and progress in the league and all. But as I said, we're only over like probably the maddest couple of weeks of, I'd say, the club's history, and it'd be nice now just to sit back and relax for maybe a day or so and
my last question's on that point. So you won the FAI Cup final 8 days ago.
Yeah.
You secured your status as a Premier Division club 2 days ago, and you'd love a break. However, when do you start next season?
But this is the thing. Like, you don't, and I won't get a break. Like, you know, just won't, because already the nature of us, our season going on a bit longer. Other clubs have got a head start on us in recruitment and signing that. So we've certainly been working. I was on the phone all morning to different agents and players and stuff like that, because if you stand still in this, you're going backwards. Like,
so no holiday?
Not just yet, anyway. Now we're back. We'll be back. I mean, pre-season starts in January, like, as well, but the players will be in before then. But no, it'd be nice to, we have a week off in the mid-season break in June, so I'm looking forward to that already.
Well, you deserve it when it comes around, that's for sure. Kevin, congratulations on all your success and all your achievements this season, and we hope for many more next season.
Thanks a million, Andrew, appreciate it.
All right, back out with the rugby after this break. Game on. Rugby. Now, welcome back to Game On. After defeat to New Zealand about 8 days ago, 9 days ago now, Ireland bounced back with victory over Argentina on Friday night. 22-19 was the final score. I'm glad to say I'm joined in studio by Keane Tracy of the Irish Independent and by Ulster and Ireland legend Stephen Ferris on the phone. Gentlemen, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Keane, let me start with you. I suppose there was a lot of things learned on for the last two weekends. Let's start with Friday night. Obviously, great to see them bounce back and get the victory, but it wasn't as easy as we might have suggested.
No, it was a bit like the Ireland football team. The first half was pretty good, and then they just took their eye off the ball, I suppose, to give the positives. They were excellent, Ireland, in that first half. I thought the quality of the three tries that they scored was outstanding. It was a reminder of the importance of what a good, solid line-out gives this Irish team. They scored two lovely tries that were clearly pre-rehearsed moves. 22-9 in front at the break, and they also held Argentina out just before halftime. They really rode their luck in terms of not getting a yellow card, which did come after halftime to Joe McCarthy, but having held them out, you were kind of thinking Ireland will really push on now. That's a big psychological blow to Argentina, but whatever Felipe Contepomi said at the break really had the desired effect, because they were a totally different team in the second half, and so were Ireland. Their penalty count was up again, 13 penalties for the second week in a row. So like you said, plenty for Andy Farrell to learn, because they went 48 minutes without scoring last Friday night, and against the All Blacks the previous week they went 36 minutes without scoring. So look, it doesn't take a genius to work out. You're not going to win too many test matches at the very top level with those kind of stats.
Stephen, you're not. And that second half performance and that discipline, how does that come about? Is it fatigue? Is it drop off in concentration? But they are concerning trends.
Yeah, I think they are. Not as bad as England, like the position they're in, losing test matches in the last 20 minutes. I think Ireland are far from that. And I think it almost feels like when we're talking about Irish rugby, that they are in the same boat as England at the minute. Like, even though they beat Argentina at the weekend, yes, they had an extremely poor second half. They got the right result, but I don't know what Keane think. It almost sort of felt like a loss at the stadium. It was a bit of a weird one right at the end, just the way Argentina were attacking right at the death. There was reports that there was a little miss of a hand in the ruck at the very last breakdown, but it went Ireland's way. It just felt like Ireland's balloon sort of burst like halfway through that second half. All the mistakes just kept creeping in. And to answer your question, it's probably when you're put under pressure that those errors start to creep into the game. Like, just seeing Jack Crowley with a cross-field kick and it went straight into touch, and it was just around the halfway line, and you're just expecting Ireland just to hold on the ball, retain possession, you know, bring the RG through phase play and wear them down, and all of a sudden a line break will happen and Ireland will get in behind them. And when they're usually in behind them, they're pretty ruthless, but they couldn't really get in behind them often enough on Saturday night. And you know, as soon as Argentina got a sniff of, you know, a bit of a comeback on, they were just a galvanized side. And I think defensively they were very, very good, Argentina. They read Ireland's attack brilliantly. They were able to shift off players, the ball out the back that we're used to seeing Ireland so often with the pod system that they employ. They were made some incredible reads. Cinti in the centre was fantastic, and they scored, you know, the try of the game as well. So yeah, it's just little errors creeping in. And you know, when an Ireland team made a mistake previously, Ruby, a mistake or two, they didn't really compound it with many more after that, where at this moment in time, the last couple of weeks, have just seemed to be hammering the air count up and up and up. So yeah, like, the positive is they got the result, but I think there's going to be a harder test to come against Australia and the form that they're in a couple of weeks' time. So you know, they're going to have to get their act together.
I know, and Keane, Stephen is right. Ireland are in a better position than England are right now, but I think the expectation on Ireland is huge. The quality of players we have, the World Cup we had, the Six Nations we've had, the expectation is of more. And maybe Stephen's right. Maybe are we being too critical on them?
Well, the expectations are huge, Ruby, because of the expectations that the team themselves have. So I don't think anything that myself or Stephen or you saying on the outside isn't anything that they're going to be saying on the inside as well. We have to remember that they are the Six Nations champions. We all know what happened at the World Cup last year. But you said the quality of players that they have. But I think it's been interesting that Andy Farrell double down on his comments last week by saying that he is concerned about the quality, and I'm paraphrasing here, the quality of talent maybe coming through the system. So all perhaps isn't rosy in the garden, but like Stephen said, they did get the win, but they're playing Fiji this weekend. You'd imagine there's going to be a good few changes, and then they're going to face an Australian side with Joe Schmidt in charge, who looked like they've really turned the corner.
Stephen, can I ask you about two pluses probably from the evening, and that was debutants Thomas Clarkson and Sam Prendergast. How did you feel they played?
Yeah, I think it was a good one for Thomas Clarkson, wasn't it? As soon as he came on and he got introduced, he had the knuckle down for a scrum because Finlay Beelan was yellow carded, and then all of a sudden there was a free kick come off the back of it. So we didn't really see him get tested very early on in his debut, but I was absolutely delighted for him. I think the most important thing when you make your debut is probably the result. Of course, you're going to remember that for a long, long time. But had it went the way of the Argentinian team, you know, it would have felt, you know, terrible in the change rooms afterwards, and having those conversations with your friends and family afterwards. You know, everybody's patting you on the back saying congratulations, and then all of a sudden you maybe haven't got the result. But that didn't happen. So congratulations to them two boys. I thought, you know, Prendergast was pretty good at out half. He controlled the game fairly well. A little pump pass, I can't remember who knocked it on, and probably if they had held it, they would have went through the hole and probably scored a try. And he just seems to take the ball to the line pretty well. But like, I thought Jack Crowley, you know, had a fantastic first half, a really, really good first half, and unfortunately it just felt like yet again, you know, he was not dragged off, but you know, after 60 minutes that, oh right son, your time's up, you've made a few mistakes here, it's time to give somebody else a go. And I don't, that's the way it sort of comes across to a lot of the fans sitting there. I know that's not the case, because Andy Farrell probably had it in his plan that he was going to bring him on regardless of what the score was going to be, just to see and test him at this level. So maybe Jack was aware of that as well, but we'll wait and see how the next couple of weeks pan out. But you know, fair congratulations to the two lads to represent their country, and secondly to get the win.
We've run out of road tonight. Thanks, lads. Still to come for the Ireland rugby team over the next couple of weeks, it is Fiji and then Australia to come. Well, that's all we've time for tonight. We'll talk rugby and Katie Taylor tomorrow. Betta De Silva is up next with a new music show, and Ruby tomorrow will be joined by Damien O'Mara. My stint is up.
RTE 2FM.